I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order on March 5th, 2024. I believe there is a quorum present.
Right.
And so, Representative Tapke, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 5th, 2024?
So moved.
Representative Tapke moves the approval of the minutes for March 5th, 2024. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 5th, 2024 are approved. So, Representative Tapke, you kind of jumped the gun a little bit, but today is Dairy Day. So we'll have a quick presentation. My apologies. Today's Dairy Day. So I want to welcome Lucas to the table, who will give us a quick presentation. They also welcomed us with some nice gifts at the committee table here. So thank you for being here, and please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Shelley DePesto from Lewiston, Minnesota. Chair Bang and committee members, my name is Shelley DePesto, and I'm a dairy farmer from Lewiston, Minnesota, representing the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. In front of you, you'll find a variety of cheeses from several Minnesota cheese plants. And you can enjoy that while we share a brief story of the Kerfeld family. They are our producers of the year. And I also wanted to mention that yesterday I decided to step back as the president of Minnesota Milk Producers Association. And we have a new president, Garrett Luthens, a dairy farmer from Hutchinson, Minnesota. Thank you.
Tim and Carrie Kerfeld, dairy farm here in central Minnesota. Milk about 300 head, four robot, Lely A5 robots. About 600 acres of land that we produce most of our feed on, and we end up purchasing some feed. Farm here with our family, five kids, four boys and one daughter that started on her own dairy farm here just a year ago.
I think we're proud that we've got family, yes, and we've got grandchildren that are involved, some even little ones. They're going to take over some year too.
Positive is the reason kids on the farm are showing them how you get milk from the cows, the cycle of life.
I'm studying diesel mechanics, and I'm learning about hydraulics and electrical. I got an interest from my dad helping him work on equipment around the farm.
The things I want to do after high school is diesel mechanic and see if I can go onto the farm some more.
Our custom work started when we built the freestall barn.
Yeah, it was kind of a way to try staying on a manageable level at the dairy, but yeah, they had some extra income.
So the year after college, I worked for another custom harvesting crew that we did forage harvesting on a larger scale, manure hauling and pumping. So I brought the manure pumping back to the farm, and now we do our own, and then we do one neighbor and my sister's new farm.
Tim's got a lot of patience, so he's really good with the kids and teaching them, and that kind of taught the kids the love of the machinery and enjoying that part of farming.
We have kids that want to come into the business. You got to have more income to help support that other family coming in. With doing that, we can put the automation in and add cow numbers in to get some income to help support another family.
Our farm has a lot of sandier soil on hilltops and more variable, so the cover crops help with the sandy soil to keep it in place, versus if you're in low ground or heavier ground, you don't necessarily need the erosion control. We have been planting rye as a double crop for forage, and then planting sorghum the following spring after we harvest the rye. We usually do that, plant the rye right after corn silage to break up the cycle of corn on corn. We have also mixed in some kale and radishes in some of the fields, but like this year, it was too dry for it to grow, and then once we did get rain for it to grow, it froze, so it didn't do what it was supposed to this year on some of the radishes and kale. In the spring, after we chop off the rye, we come in and put a layer of manure on, liquid dairy manure on, for the sorghum. A lot of our manure is applied in the fall with the kale or the radishes. We put that on right before we apply manure, and that's supposed to help take in that nitrogen and then slowly release it the spring after.
Everything's different with cover crops. Every year is different. Some years it doesn't work at all. Some years it does work. Basically because it, either the crops got off late that we couldn't get it planted in time, or the window ended up getting really late or really narrow of a window to get it in. Some of the other reasons why you use it is soil erosion. A lot of the hills that we have, try protecting that soil to keep it on the hills rather than having it wash away or blow away. And it's just another way to protect the environment.
And we're proud that they are looking at the same thing we were looking at, preserved farmland. And for the next generation, they got a couple more kids here. The little one over there might be milking cows in 20 years, who knows?
Thank you so very much for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. I also want to give a quick shout out. We have a couple of students here today from Hutchinson, FFA Ag Issues Team. If you can wave yourself in from the crowd. Members, welcome them to the committee. Thank you for being here today. I'm glad you guys can join us. So we'll get started with our business of the day. We have a number of bill hearings. Representative Tafke, you can proceed to the table. I know you're very excited to present your bill. It's House File 3809 on elk provisions. Representative Tafke, if you can move your bill and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And members, House File 3809, I make a motion to lay over House File 3809 for future inclusion in a bill.
All right. To the bill, Representative Tappy, do you have testifiers?
I do not.
Okay.
Unless there are questions.
All right. Discussion to the bill. Or
let me tell you what it is first.
Yes. Representative Tappy.
I mean, we could go with that if you'd like. That would be okay.
Proceed.
But this is an agency bill to help streamline and consolidate the language around elk damage to corn, specifically corn and soybeans. And so it takes, and this is not changing anything that is currently being done. This is continuing language that is existing today, and we'll move that forward and make it a lot easier and clear for how the payments get made and how the reports get made and what is and is not included from the elk damage.
All right. Thank you, Representative Tafke. Do we have any testifiers that would like to testify on the bill? Seeing none, we'll move to discussion. Discussion to the bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tafke, you mentioned the damage to corn and soybeans, among other things, fences, but corn and soybeans come to mind. I've heard a lot, or we've all heard a lot from soybean farmers, especially with deer damage. Any possibility of adding that to some of this language, or how do you feel about expanding this to include damage done by deer?
Representative Tafke.
Thank you, Chair Vang and Lead Anderson. At this time, it is under elk only. I know that we've had discussions in the past about having deer damage be included in that, but this is not changing the current programs. It's just consolidating the language. So at this time, I will not be in favor of adding deer to that, but I know there are a lot of folks that have been using this elk program, and they've even taken and moved some of the money from the wolf damage fund in order to help pay for the elk damage that has been happening. And so this is specifically around elk today.
Representative Anderson.
Well, just a final comment, Madam Chair, that we are paying damages for one type of depredation, and others we are not paying any depredation damage for. And just wanted to make that point, and hopefully at some time down the road we could address that situation, Madam Chair.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have so many elk up in my district, I'm glad to see that this bill isn't going to change the way the program operates, and I've had some conversations with the department about that. I was wondering if we could get maybe Commissioner Peterson or someone up to talk or answer a question quick on elk claims, if we could.
Okay. I see someone approaching the table. If you can identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark Abrahamson, I'm the Plant Protection Director at the Department of Agriculture.
Okay. Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just curious on, and we've talked about this before, but on the record, just the elk damage claims have been going up, and I know that the way the wolf money flows back and forth, I'm just curious about the elk damage claims to date and the size of the population up there.
Mark.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. So elk damage claims have been very high this year, so we've actually fully spent the appropriation for elk damage and transferred about $21,000 from the wolf damage fund to cover elk claims.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment, you know, as we move forward and knowing the wolf problems we have up in northern Minnesota and the elk situation in my district in particular, and the claims there, just concerns as we move ahead. I know there's DNR policy bill to talk about expanding that herd in Kitson County in particular. And, you know, just concerned that, you know, if you look at the numbers, you know, the farmers up there are dealing with that every year. And I'm hoping that at some point, I know I offered an amendment last year to expand the size of that program as far as depredation goes. And I think we really need to think about that moving forward, especially if we're taking wolf money to pay some of these elk damage claims. Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Vang. And I've got a question on the fencing. You know, I see that it appears that the total compensation remains at $20,000, but specifically related to fencing, it is reducing down to $1,800 in a year. That's on 3.32 and 3.3, And so just, I had to buy some fencing the other day, you know, where we've got an early spring, we're able to get out there and do some, and my jaw about hit the ground when I got the quote for what the price of fencing was. And, you know, I think this might be going the wrong direction, but I'm kind of wondering, you know, what the explanation is.
Mark?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So actually that is the current limit for fencing is $1,800 per fiscal year per owner. And it's stipulated in the rule. And so part of what the statute amendment will do will take those key elements from the rule and put them all together in the statute, and the rule will become obsolete.
Okay, Representative Nelson.
Thank you.
Representative Burkle.
Sorry, just to clarify that. So the way I'm reading the brief here, maybe Mark, you could answer this, but the 20,000 figure in here is for the crop, that'd be crop loss, right? That's the max on crop loss, and the 1,800 is fencing. That's the way it's always been, correct?
Mark?
Yep, Representative, the way that it is currently is there's a $20,000 limit overall per owner
okay.
per year, and 1,800 of that can be
fencing. Be fencing.
Yep.
Get it. Thank you.
All right. Further discussion? Closing remarks, Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. This is getting this clarified and getting the language set up is a really good way to go. So I just appreciate everyone's support, and I renew my motion that this House File 3809 be laid over for future consideration.
All right, House File 3809 is laid over. Next bill we have is we are going to do a quick motion first on House File 3763. This is a previous bill that we heard in relation to agri in the last previous committee hearing. So I'm going to move to reconsider the motion to send House File 3763 to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, Phyllison, what's the reason behind this or what are we doing here?
Yeah, so I intend to have House File 3763 be a vehicle bill. So we're going to reconsider the motion and have it laid over. Further discussion to the motion? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no.
No.
The ayes have it, the motion prevails, and House File 3763 is laid over. So we'll move on to our next bill, House File 4035, Representative Cha. And he has two bills to present. So this one is House File 4035 is on food handler license provisions. If you can move your bill, Representative Cha, and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, I'd like to move House File 4035, Chair. Ben, thank you.
Okay, to the bill. Representative Cha.
Yes, House File 4035 is to make conforming changes to the Minnesota Statute Chapter 28A, licensing food handler, and the 34 non-alcoholic beverages. And so, it's just a quick fix for the agency. Thank you.
All right. Any testifiers that would like to testify on behalf of this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to discussion. Discussion to the bill. All right. Seeing no discussion, closing remarks, Representative Shah?
Please support the bill. Thank you.
All right. House File 4035 is laid over. Next bill is House File 3815 on grain indemnity provisions. If you can move your bill, Representative Cha, and proceed.
Yes, Chair, I can move HF 3815 for possible inclusion. Thank you.
To the bill, Representative Cha.
Yes, House Bill 3815 is a grain indemnity provision. This bill revised financial reporting requirements for smaller elevators to make compliance achievable. For grain elevators purchasing less than $7.5 million annually, this bill requires financial statement will be changed from reviewed financial report provided by CPA to financial report prepared by a third party. For elevators purchasing less than $20 million annually, the required financial statement will be changed from audited to financial report and to reviewed financial report. And so this is provisions to the grain indemnity, which we passed last year. And I do have someone from the MDA here, if you have any technical questions. Thank you.
Okay, I see that we have the A1 amendment. Representative Hansen, please move and discuss your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the A1 amendment. Members, this is relating to the interest that comes off of the $10 million that are in the grain indemnity fund. So the not touching the $10 million that are in the corpus that would be there. And what it does is it provides debt reduction grants for growers that are growing for a farmer's market. So, and that would be statewide. If they are growers for a farmer's market, they could be eligible for a grant program from the Department of Agriculture for debt reduction. So that could be operating loans, that could be land loans. And so with that large amount of dollars, and I believe that it's almost $500,000 has been generated already from the interest, and with a likelihood of a very low target, this would be a way of getting help to food producers who are growing for farmers markets throughout the state. And many of those are BIPOC farmers, so reducing their debt makes a long-term gain, so instead of having to make those interest payments. I know there is concern about this amendment, but I guess I would ask for your support, because this is a way to get this discussion. If we do have a target, there's a way of, if there's general fund that are here, by adopting this amendment, then it's my understanding this is being laid over. So that keeps it alive for discussions on any other sources of funding that would be there. So I would ask for your support.
Representative Chalk.
Thank you, Representative Hansen, for the amendment. I think it is a good amendment to start a conversation, and so therefore I urge a yes vote. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I have a great deal of heartburn with this amendment. We just can't help ourselves. The ink is barely dry on this grain indemnity fund, and we're dipping into it and taking money out of it. I was very surprised to see this amendment, and this fund isn't even fully funded yet. I'd like to ask Mr. Sullivan, you know, we put in $10 million, or the legislature did last session, to kind of jumpstart the program that you carried, Representative Cha. Thank you for that. And there are trigger points off, trigger points on, and Mr. Sullivan, how would you characterize this indemnity fund to be fully funded?
Mr. Sullivan?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, the statute provides that if the balance in the indemnity account drops to $8 million or less, then the Department of Agriculture is authorized to instate a fee of 0.2% on net proceeds from grain sales, and that fee in general stays in effect until the account reaches a balance of $15 million.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. So fully funding this account is $15 million. A lot of folks went along with this program last year under the assumption that there's going to be some state input into the fund to help to get it up to $15 million. And now, thankfully, we haven't had to use it yet. it's accruing interest, and there's a move to take money out of it, the interest out of it, when, again, we just can't seem to help ourselves here. We're putting up a $700 million office complex here and grabbing money to do this. And we're not even talking here about farmers who may be in trouble. The language says it could be an accelerated principal payment. That means they aren't in arrears. It's an accelerated payment would be eligible with this amendment. There seem to be no parameters. Who is eligible? What are the criteria? Who can apply? How large these loans can be? Madam Chair, I am a no vote, a solid no vote on this amendment.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Vang. And, you know, again, to echo Lead Anderson's comments, you know, when this was set up, as Mr. Sullivan said, you know, this was supposed to be a trigger on at $8 million, a trigger off at $15 million, and, you know, it was really supposed to be there for grain indemnity. And, you know, this is building, you know, we were told that we have to protect ourselves. And now the count, you know, it's being raided already. And it's just disappointing that this is happening so quickly. And I would like to ask for a roll call on this amendment. And I think it's just a bad direction to go. I think this should have been its own bill introduced. Maybe you have a bill, Chair Hansen. But I think, you know, we were asked and told that we needed to have, you know, get this done last year for our own grain, and that's, you know, the money's being raided already. So, you know, I really oppose this amendment.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's interesting the definition of raiding when there's $10 million in the fund that was provided by the people of Minnesota, the general taxpayers, into the fund. And as nonpartisan staff indicated, if it goes down to $8 million, then there's a fee that kicks in to drive it up to $15 million. So you have $10 million that's in that fund. There is no rating. There's $10 million that remains in that fund. And no fee goes on until it goes down to $8 million, which under the amendment wouldn't be possible because it's not taking out of the fund. You know, there's a lot of assumptions about whose money it is. It was the people's money. And to provide help to growers who are producing food at farmers' markets that serve consumers all around the state, I think this is a good use of the interest on that fund. Again, I'll state that by keeping this amendment on, it keeps the concept alive that if we have a fund, a general fund, then you can provide in a type of appropriation. I have said to the Department of Ag, happily work with them so we can define this. I've said to the farmers market growers too, because they had some questions about how to make it clearer on who applies. I think those are things that can be worked out. That's the benefit of laying the bill over, is to continue that discussion. If you vote down the amendment, we're running out of time. We probably won't get a bill introduced and heard, and the concept is dead. So I'd ask for your support to vote to approve the amendment, to continue that discussion, to keep this concept alive, to provide support for growers at farmers markets throughout our state.
Further discussion? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I just have a question. So maybe I need a little more explanation, because in your amendment, is there a dollar amount per claim then, or how does that roll out? Do we know?
In this amendment, I'm going to refer to the author of the amendment, Representative Hansen. Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Harder. The bill is being laid over, developing the concepts. My intent would be 10 or 15K, something relatively small that can have a big impact for small farmers who are participating as growers. But I would work with the Department of Agriculture, and it takes keeping the amendment alive to continue that conversation and get the dollars out. Specifically, a way you could provide that, not every grower has a Schedule F form, but they may have the loan from Compeer or for their local bank on whether it's equipment or whether it's their land, something that documents that debt and its debt relief.
Representative Anderson. Oh, my apologies. Representative Harder, follow up. Representative Anderson.
Thank you again for your indulgence, Madam Chair. Well, again, we can play with words. And I'm not arguing that this may not be a worthy cause, Representative Hansen. If it was or if it is, introduce a bill. This is our fourth week in session. To say we're running out of time would indicate this was maybe an idea after I made the mistake of asking about the interest in this account in a bill hearing a week or so ago. And with the interest rates what they are and this sum of money, that money in the interest side of it is fairly substantial. But again, the amendment is poorly written. It doesn't have any parameters around it, and it talks about taking this until 2029, when this fund may have been used, who knows how many times it could have been used in the next 5 years. This is, as Representative Nelson said, this is raiding the account. The money is there, and we had the assumption that the money would stay there until needed. Hopefully it's not needed. But again, I would urge members, every member, to vote against this amendment.
Final comment, Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question for fiscal staff or maybe MDA. But are there other funds where, I mean, earnings are siphoned off for the purposes? I'm just curious if that's the case.
Ken Savory.
Chair and members, I don't know off the top of my head any other funds that are like that. But I can certainly do some research and get back. But there are LCCMR funds from my memory that may have similar fiscal scenarios where there are funds that are siphoned off or directed elsewhere.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for that answer. I guess what I would close out with is, you know, we've got plenty of growers in the past. I could think of Carlstead Elevator in my district, Ashby in the past. I mean, the purpose of this program was the fact that the bonding license and bonding program wasn't making folks whole. And if we're going to take this money and raid it and use it, rather than accelerating principal payments for someone, maybe we should be looking back at the folks that were harmed in the past and using that interest to make them whole. There's a lot of guys in my district I could think of in Carlstead that would appreciate a little kickback from the interest in this if we're going to raid the fund. Something to think about.
Okay. Final comment, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was going to note that we'll be voting later today on a constitutional dedication of appropriations of about $79 million that is the interest off of the corpus from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, which is set up in perpetuity from the lottery. So there is precedent for that. Generally, we have precedent of not going back and reimbursing for past action and our perspective. And that's what this program would be, is prospective using the interest.
Okay, roll call being requested. We will move on to roll call.
Chair Vang.
Aye.
Vice Chair Purcell.
Aye.
Lead Anderson.
Anderson, nay.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle, no.
Representative Cha.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Representative Harder.
No.
Representative Jacob.
No.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Ream.
Aye.
Sintamura is excused. And Representative Tapke.
Aye.
There being 7 ayes and 5 noes, the Amendment A1 is adopted. We'll move on to testimony. With the first testifier is the Department of Ag on House File 3815 as amended. Peter, if you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Peter Chesed, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I do have our SME, Nick Milanowski, here to answer any technical questions that might pertain to 3815, Representative Cha's bill. And thank you for bringing this bill, Representative Cha. Just quickly to the discussion before, I just want to go on record that Chair Hansen and I had a chance to talk earlier today. We really do like the idea and the concept of this new grant program. We would need to work further to flesh out what it might actually look like, the financial, the fiscal implications for our department. However, and I communicated this to Mr. Hansen, we do have concerns over the way that it is funded, not only for the fiscal integrity of the grant indemnity program, but for the proposed new grant program. So I just thank you for the opportunity for being on the record on that, Madam Chair. And with that, if anyone has technical questions about 3815, I will do my best to answer them. If I can't, I'll refer to my colleague.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Jessup, testifier, this bill I think is needed, it's necessary, it's been asked for by especially our smaller elevators. And, with that, there comes a little bit more uncertainty in terms of, the financial integrity of some of these operations. Do you have the staff, and we've also done away with the bonding program here at the department for elevators. Are you confident you have enough staff people to keep a good eye on the process of especially these smaller operations and can have a good handle if somebody is headed for trouble? Is your staff built up to be able to do that?
Mr. Pater?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I would ask that Mr. Milanowski come up here and kind of give you more details as to the capacity and what they would be focusing on. But just to your first point about the smaller elevators and the smaller folks in this industry, we feel like these proposals are really a response to what we've heard from them over the years. As you recall, prior to an indemnity fund being created, the legislature was looking at ways to increase the financial accountability of some of these elevators to hopefully stave off like the failures that we had been seeing. So our grain advisory group did meet throughout the summer and this fall, and while they didn't come to a consensus, these were some of the ideas that came out of that group. But Madam Chair, if it's okay, I would ask that Mr. Milanowski come up to address the specific staffing capacity question that Representative Anderson had.
Okay. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and representatives. My name is Nick Milanowski. I'm the program manager for the fruit, vegetable, and grain section at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. To Representative Anderson's question, we have 6 staff assigned to our group, 2 office staff and 4 inspectors out in the field. As a reminder, we have a requirement to inspect all grain facilities at least once annually. And so the way that we look at this bill is it's a hand-in-glove approach with our on-site inspections and a review of the financial reports that are filed with our office. We have spoken with other states and compared what they are doing across their grain regulatory programs in terms of monitoring financial positions and feel that we have the staff and the appropriate number of staff to review these reports annually and step in if necessary and require additional financial reporting or additional on-site inspections or monitoring.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Thanks for that testimony. And just one quick question on when you do an on-site inspection and look at the books, do you also do a grain weigh-up so you know at exactly how much corn is in the bin, how many soybeans, and what their position is in terms of hedging, that type of thing?
Mr. Nick?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, yes, we do. Our inspectors are measuring every single bin, ground pile, tote, and totaling that and keeping track of that year on year. And we are accounting for also their financial positions. If their contracts and their hedging that they've taken on, when we go into these elevators, we are looking at the contracts that they've written and the payment terms of those contracts, and they have a requirement in law to maintain a 90% coverage of those contracts, so the ability to pay out on those contracts that are extending credit beyond a cash sale or immediate payment.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks. I'll be really quick, Madam Chair. Just one quick question, final question. Some elevators use different accounting methods, a cash or accrual. Does that make a difference in how they weigh up at the end of the year, or how do you handle those two different types of accounting?
Mr. Nick?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, we are able to dig in and account for each of those separately. Of course, we treat them slightly differently. Under the current law, all audited financials and reviewed financials are very standard accounting reporting structure. And under the proposed law, they would be allowed to do tax basis financial reporting and GAAP financial reporting using several different standards. But we are confident that we can square that circle and figure out what's going on at each facility with our inspectors on site.
Okay. We do have one more testifier, Laura Lemke, if she's still here in the room, Executive Director of Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Laura Lemke. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. The MGFA is a 117-year-old organization that represents the interests of the grain elevator and feed mill industry in the state. I'm here today to address some issues that we have with House File 3815. First and foremost, the definition of scale tickets at the end of the bill needs to be addressed. As this is MDA's bill, I've been assured by them that a drafting error caused the words showing the weight, grade, and kind of grain to be struck in the bill. Eliminating that verbiage would undoubtedly cause major issues for anyone involved in the grain buying or storage process. So we wholeheartedly support restoring that language. Surprisingly, MDA and MGFA managed to find some common ground on a few items in this bill. We support allowing reviews or audits for licensees purchasing grain between $7.5 million and $20 million annually. We also support the audit requirement for annual grain purchases over the added $20 million threshold. I'd like to point out that several years ago, when the implementation of the annual purchase thresholds was being discussed, MGFA advocated for a $15 to $20 million threshold. Unfortunately, the legislature disregarded the suggestion at the time. As to revising the financial reporting requirements in this bill, MDA staff and I have talked through the reasoning for the change to the financial statements. MGFA knows and understands that small grain buyers have struggled to comply with the financial reporting requirements due to the cost and availability of CPA firms able to perform a review or audit of their business. Again, I'd like to point out that before the financial reporting requirements were written into the statutes, MGFA recognized and testified to these issues and also cautioned that these requirements would potentially drive folks out of the industry, and they have. According to MDA, we've lost approximately 20 entities over the last 4 or 5 years. While we understand the desire for flexibility in financial statements, this bill will eliminate the use of a uniform reporting standard for all grain licensees. Changing from the generally accepted accounting principles, which uses an accrual basis accounting, to national or international accounting standards will allow for financial statements on a tax basis of accounting or cash basis, which could create a distorted picture of potential liabilities related to a grain licensee's grain obligations. In addition, MDA staff feels confident that they are able to adequately monitor any issues a licensee may have or exhibit by using these more relaxed and, dare I say, less quality financial reports. In conjunction with MDA's annual examinations. Respectfully, MGAFA is not convinced that a staff of two office personnel, neither of which has an accounting background or an auditing background, is adequate to evaluate over 300 licensees each year. And we certainly don't feel that they will do a better job than a surety's underwriters could do under the prior program, the prior grain bond program for the industry. MGFA would be open, as such, I am asking this company, this committee, to seriously reconsider reinstating the grain bond program for the industry. MGFA would be open to working with MDA to rework the bond scale and increase grain bonds for licensees. In the interest of transparency, MGFA does offer grain bonds through the association. We have for more than 80 years. However, it is simply a service that we offer. No one is required or obligated to purchase their bonds through MGFA. And in reality, most grain bonds were purchased through a licensee's property casualty insurance carrier. For anyone who may imply or desire to reinstate the grain bonding program for the industry, that it's financially motivated, it isn't. Our motivation is to have reliable financial oversight for the grain industry, and this committee should want the same thing, as there's a $10 million grain indemnity fund on the line. Last year, legislators lauded that indemnity fund as a legacy piece of legislation and a game changer for producers. If you still feel that way, then protect it by ensuring the financial oversight of the industry. Finally, MGFA does not support eliminating the CEO and board certification of a licensee's financial statement. The Board of Directors has a fiduciary responsibility to its members and, as such, should be willing and able to attest to the accuracy of their financial statement. Thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director Lemke. Seeing no further testifiers, we'll move to discussion. Discussion to the bill as amended. All right. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vane. I suppose as someone the department needs to answer this question, I'm not sure. Why are we moving away from the generally accepted accounting principles? I'm not sure what national or international accounting standards. Can someone explain the difference?
I see Nick approaching the desk. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, my name is Nick Malinowski with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Representative Harder, the purpose of expanding the allowable accounting reports is to address several international companies that hold licenses here in the state. It would allow us to accept reports that are completed in Canada or other countries where these companies are headquartered. Generally accepted accounting principles also apply to reviewed and audited statements, and the language also allows for reports that would not be a reviewed or audited financial statement, such as compilations or tax basis. And so those do not fall under the generally accepted accounting principles standards.
Representative Harder?
Yes, thank you, Chair Vang. Is there a reason why then you don't use a combination of both? I mean, will this change the way operators or elevators do things now? I mean, are they going to have to change to a new system?
Nick?
Or are you still going to accept? I'm unclear as to what your intent is.
Nick?
Madam Chair and Representative Harder, yes, we would still accept the generally accepted accounting practices reports that we're receiving today. However, if a company opts to submit tax basis, financial statements, or compilation financial statements, we would accept those as well. So companies could make that decision as they see fit.
Representative Harder.
Thank you. One more question. Then why don't you keep the generally accepted accounting principles? I mean, why didn't you keep that in there? I mean, if they can use one or the other, and that's what you want the department to do, okay, that's one thing. But when I read it, if I have an elevator, I'm thinking I'm going to have to change the way I do my accounting. So can you just answer why you don't keep both in?
Nick?
Madam Chair and Representative, it was the language was intended to be more inclusive rather than exclusive in terms of allowing a larger number of reports. And so that is why it allows for national or international standards, rather than specifically calling out generally accepted accounting principles.
Okay. Further discussion? Closing remarks, Representative Chow?
Yes, thank you, Chair Vang. To the members of this committee, in regards to the amendment A1, I want to ensure all of you that this bill is being laid over and that we will continue to work on this bill to make it in better shape and form. And that is a promise to all the members in this committee, and especially to my co-authors who helped me co-author the H-File 2718, the Green Indemnity Fund last year, which was Lead Anderson, Burko, and Nelson. And so, and to my members on the other my side of the aisle, just want to put that out there, that this Green Indemnity Fund is in the infancy stage. And so there are things that we need to make sure that is taken care of before we start moving forward. But anyways, thank you. And I ask the committee for support on HF 3815. Thank you.
All right. House File 3815 as amended is laid over. Next bill we have is Representative Hansen, House File 3823 on fertilizer definitions. Representative Hansen, if you can move your bill and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House File 3823 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill.
All right. To the bill, Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, this is an agency bill. I would ask Mr. Kethis to come up. And it is providing for definitions relating to the fertilizer law in 18C. It defines a beneficial substance. It clearly defines soil amendments and adoption of national standards. And it also provides more description on packaged fertilizers and updates on 3.14 phosphoric acid to phosphate.
All right, I see that we have the A1 amendment. Representative Hansen, if you can also move the A1 and discuss your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would move the A1 amendment. What the A1 amendment does, and members have seen this before, it provides definitions of nitrogen fertilizer, the diammonium phosphate, liquid 28, liquid 32, malorganite, monoammonium phosphate, and defines nitrogen fertilizer and urea. And then it makes sure that the reporting codes analyze that directly. So it is adding additional definitions to break down clarity, and I would ask for your support, and Peter can also comment.
All right. Peter, would you like to testify on behalf of the amendment too as well?
Madam Chair, members, yes, just to let you know, MDA does not have an issue with this amendment.
Discussion to the A1 amendment. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the Department of Agriculture, would you clarify that is this amendment also a department bill, part of a department bill?
Peter?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, no, this amendment was brought by Representative Hansen.
Representative Anderson. Further discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A1 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no.
No.
The ayes have it, the A1 is adopted. So we'll move to testimony. I don't see any testifiers. Does Peter, would do, okay. So we'll move to discussion to the bill. Any discussion to House File 3823 as amended? Seeing none, closing remarks, Representative Hansen.
Thank you for your support. This is really a definition updating bill. It is being laid over for possible inclusion. So I renew my motion to lay it over.
All right. House File 3823 as amended is laid over. Next, we also have another of your bill, Representative Hansen, House File 4082 on pesticide product discontinuing and canceling provisions. If you can move your bill and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move House File 4082 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill.
All All right, to the bill.
And Madam Chair, this is also 4882 is an agency bill providing for clarity when there is cancellation of a product, a registration. And it's fairly descriptive and short. And then there is an A1 amendment, but I would like to give Peter the opportunity to speak to the bill before we consider the amendment.
All right, Representative Hansen moves the A1 amendment. So to the A1, Peter.
Madam Chair, members, this is, again, a department bill. It is essentially just technical in nature, and we're trying to expedite the cancellation process for some of these registrants.
Okay. To the A1. Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, same question. Is this amendment a department initiative?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, it is not.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Hansen?
Madam Chair, I would move the A1 amendment and like to describe it if possible.
Oh, yes. Please proceed.
So, members, 4082 is dealing with the cancellation of a pesticide registration. So when a company is wanting to sell a pesticide in the state, they have to register it with the Department of Agriculture. The bill as it began is relating to what happens when a product is canceled. What there are things at the beginning beyond regular registration. One is an experimental use pesticide product registration. So that's looking forward of a company may say, hey, we've been doing using this product in an experimental basis. We want to have that registration for that experimental. You know, maybe they're using it in another state. They want to look at the using it, so conditionally registering it for experimental use. What subdivision 5 does is says before the issuance of that, and usually those experimental use registrations take some time. There's a petition, or petition's not the right word, but a request for experimental use. This would require the commissioner to convene a panel of outside experts, including Department of Health, Department of Natural Resources, PCA, and the University of Minnesota, so that there is someone in addition providing advice. It does not say that the commissioner must follow that advice, but they must convene and consider the advice in approving an experimental use pesticide. Section 3 relates to when there's an emergency, and when there's an emergency use request, that usually has to move very quickly, and recognizing that it is hard to convene a panel if you're under an emergency. An example might be soybean aphids, and there's a product, there's an infestation, and the commissioner has to respond quickly. What this section 3 does is says that if the commissioner is doing that emergency registration exemption, so they're providing that quick response, that they still convene the panel so that there is input onto that, because there may be a continuation or if it comes back again. So it's having an additional scientific or health assessment. The authority still resides with the commissioner, but it's involving other people. My rationale here is that it's convened, the decision may have been made, but it's some type of review. And you could ask the department if they support the or have a problem with the A1 amendment.
Peter?
Madam Chair and members, we do not have a position on the amendment. In what appears to be kind of a theme of this committee, we do have some continued work to do with Chair Hansen here, but understanding that this is going to be laid over, we think we have ample time to have a longer discussion about just some of the logistical and practical realities or implications of this amendment. We don't have a position on this, this amendment, Madam Chair.
Further discussion to the A1, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Vang. And I'm just kind of wondering what, you know, the advisory panel or whatever, maybe the commissioner could answer, or maybe somebody else needs to. You know, what is the current process for getting a project or a, you know, product registered and be able to legally use it in the state?
Peter?
Madam Chair, Representative Nathan, I'd ask that our team, one member of the team, come and answer the specifics for that, because he would know it better than I. Thank you.
Okay. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Raj Mann, and I am a program manager at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. For the process, how currently the emergency use application moves forward is, it is moved by the experts from the University of Minnesota or wherever there is a problem. Then it comes to the department. There are certain requirements which must be met. We check the boxes. We look for what's the issue. Is it an emergency? And if it meets those requirements, we forward that to the Environmental Protection Agency. It's the Environmental Protection Agency which makes the final determination if the application should be approved or not.
Representative Nelson.
Okay, so thank you for that explanation. And so I guess kind of the next question, would this be creating a panel that currently is not utilized, or is that, and I don't know if that's for Chair Hansen or who this is for.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As the testimony occurred, you have input from top of the University of Minnesota who's doing the expertise. But the rationale here is you're involving the other agencies. It formalizes this process. So you have that advice as part of the record going forward. So it has, you may have the experts at the Department of Ag. This provides that third-party evaluation advice. Again, we're not giving authority to the panel. We're providing that advice on that decision. I think it actually helps the decision-making process to have that formal. And I want to be clear, I'm not touching the registration process. It's the experimental use, and we do need to make sure that that risk is there. Yes, the EPA, but we've seen wide variation in administrations of the federal government. And I think we can do things better in terms of making sure we get that input. I think it strengthens the case on a request if you've had that formalized process. I'm not assuming it gets turned off. And then the same thing, when you've got to respond quickly, you've got to have the experts at the department in that. But having that review, I think, also provides some type of integrity to that decision, because you've had, okay, we're going to look at that. Did that work? Was there any consequence? You know, and we can look at, I'll use an example of where I think the department has done well with dicamba compared to the other states. They've taken a more reasoned and rational approach, where other states had to react and have had much more consequential concerns relating to dicamba. So I see this, it's experimental uses and emergency uses are rare, but I think this helps provide support, and it is the agency. The University of Minnesota is a big place, so you have the researcher that could be in small grains, could be in forestry, could be in corn or soybeans, but you may have the researchers who could be there from a health impact as well.
Final follow-up, Representative Nelson.
Thank you for that. And so this would really pertain more to the experimental use. So really, it would be previous if there was a product trying to be used or looking to be registered to be used for soybean aphids, using your example. So if that were an issue this summer and the EPA was looking at having it licensed for subsequent years, it would be possible to get experimental use or expedited use on it in a previous growing season without the full registration of the EPA, if I'm understanding that correctly. Maybe I'm misunderstanding the intent of this.
Sure, Madam Chair and Representative. For experimental use permit, the process is a little different. For the experimental use permit, the registrants have to first get the permission from EPA. So once they get the permission from the EPA, then it moves to the states. So then we will, so they'll have already have to get the approval from EPA, then it comes to the state, and then we will look whether that experimental use permit, where they can conduct the experiments. We don't have much role in that. Once the EPA approves the experimental use permit, we usually go as per the requirements of the EPA.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have much of an issue with the experimental language here, but it's interesting, the language in the first paragraph is exactly the same as the language in the emergency paragraph. Must convene and consider the advice of a panel of outside and health experts. And to me, and you talked, Representative Hansen, about the emergency being more of a time-sensitive situation, and I would be much more comfortable if that must were changed to may in on line 13, 113, but you're treating them both the same in terms of a time interval, and yet you even said that the emergency one could be more of a time sensitive situation, and that's the part that would concern me.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson. When you look on 1.2, the idea here was it's submitted, and it's the idea on section 3 is post hoc, so it's not pre, it's not a screen, it's post hoc evaluating that decision, and I think this is what the department was talking to make sure that we're clear on that. You know, how, did this work? Did it work as well as we anticipated? So again, this is being laid over if adopted, but that's, I'm not sure about the must to may, but I want to have after that decision, and again, this is rare, I'm not affecting the commissioner's authority to make the decision, but because you got to move quick.
Yeah.
But is this, you know, was there something that happened? You know, did this, to have just some way of looking at it after that.
Okay. Representative Anderson? No. All right. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no.
No.
The ayes have it, and the A1 is adopted. Seeing no further testimonies or testifier, discussion to the bill.
I ask for your support. I renew my motion to lay House File 4082 as amended, lay over for possible inclusion in a future bill.
House File 4082 as amended is laid over. Next bill that we'll do is one of my bills. House File 4322 on sustainable aviation fuel. Oh, yes.
Representative Vang, would you like to move House File 4322 to be referred to the Environment Committee?
Yes, so move, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vang. And please explain your bill.
All right, members. This proposal would clarify the eligibility of SAF products for the SAF tax credit certification that is administered by the MDA. It provides technical corrections to the definition of SAF in Minnesota Chapter 41A.30 to better reflect the rapidly changing SAF production technology. There are additional pathways and new technologies to produce SAF that include feedstocks such as biogenic CO2 released from ethanol plants, direct air capture, and green hydrogen. As currently defined in statute, this product would not meet the definition of SAF in Minnesota Chapter 41A.3, so timing is critical to update the definition of SAF in statute before the tax credit goes into effect fiscal year 2025. And with that, I can answer any questions or have discussion.
If anyone would like to testify on behalf of this bill, I don't have anyone signed up. Seeing no testifiers, member discussion to the bill.
Here.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the department could just define gaseous carbon oxides.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is Megan Lennon. I lead the Energy and Environment section at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And gaseous carbon oxides is a fancy way of saying carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, I thought so, but I just wanted on the record. So.
Any other questions or discussion to the bill? Lead Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for this additional provision, Chair Vang. And this doesn't have anything to do with how that CO2 is captured, correct? It's just the utilization of CO2 for a sustainable fuel, correct?
Representative Vang, our testifier.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, thank you for the question. This technical correction does not have anything to do with how the CO2 is captured. The point of it is to broaden the definition of sustainable aviation fuel, so the feedstock, so we can use additional feedstocks like waste CO2.
Lead Anderson, any follow-up?
No.
Any other discussion to the bill? Okay, Representative Vang, closing comments?
All right, thank you, members, for your time, and I'll just renew my motion to send House File 4322 to the Environment Committee.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay. And the motion passes. This bill is on its way to Environment. Representative Vang, would you like to present your next bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. So the next bill is House File 4323. Mm-hmm. This is an agency bill in relation to the beginning farmers tax credit. This bill would modify the annual set aside expiration dates that applies to the tax credit. So under current law, RFA, the Rural Finance Authority, must allocate 50% of all new credits each year to eligible owners of agriculture assets who sell or rent to emerging farmers. Then October 1st each year, the RFA may allocate unused credits to any eligible owner of agricultural assets, regardless of whether the owner sells or rents to an emerging farmers. So therefore, House File 4322 would change this date from October to June, effective for taxable years that begin after December 31st, 2023.
And if we have any testifiers who are interested in speaking to the bill, not seeing any, so we will move to member discussion to House File 4323. Lead Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Vang, what's the reason for this change, amending the statute?
Representative Vang.
Yeah, perhaps the department can better explain this, but under my understanding, the dates don't give enough time for the administration or the Rural Finance Authority to allocate the credits, so this just gives it more time to allocate credits.
Lead Anderson? Any other questions or discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Vang, closing comments.
Members, this is a good bill, and I will renew my motion to lay over House File 4323.
And the bill is laid over. The final bill up, Representative Ream, and I will hand the gavel back over to Chair Bain.
All right, Representative Ream, to your bill, if you can move House Files 4164 and proceed to your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So I'm here to present House File 4164. This bill would modify license renewal and financial responsibility requirements that apply to pesticide applicators licensed by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. It would impact the following license types: structural, pest control, commercial, and non-commercial. Right. And I make the motion to move this for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Any testifiers on behalf of the bill? Seeing none, we'll move to discussion. Discussion to House File 4164. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just explain a little bit more what how this would impact your commercial and non-commercial applicators, please?
Sure, I can start. Thank you very much. I can start, but I might ask for some assistance from a representative from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. So this bill is basically codifying what MDA has been doing in regards to authorizing applications or applicators when they apply for certification. So for starters, it authorizes MDA to suspend or revoke a structural pest control applicator's license if the applicator fails to provide proof of financial responsibility upon request. It allows MDA to require commercial applicators seeking license renewal to complete a recertification workshop annually, biannually, or once every 3 years, depending upon the applicator's license category. And it authorizes MDA to require the licensee to pass a re-examination test if the licensee does not attend an MDA required recertification workshop. So basically, these are things that MDA has been doing, and they just wanted to codify and clarify this into law.
I see we have a staff person. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and representatives. My name is Gurindabir Chahal. I'm supervisor of licensing and certification unit at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
If you can answer the question, Representative Anderson, could you repeat your question if, believe, to the testifier, if you would like him to answer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just wondering how this is going to impact somebody who's spraying for the co-op. I mean, it's hard to find people that will put in the hours that they need to in the spring and the fall. And is this making it more onerous for them to be licensed in terms of getting a renewal? How much time do these things take? And will this change that quite a bit?
Supervisor?
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Representative Anderson. This is not going to change any of the practices. We want to align the statutory language with the MDA practices that we have been doing for decades. So in 2019, just to give you a background, in 2019, Office of Legislative Audit, they audited the department and they made some suggestion to clear the ambiguity on the statutory language regarding 18B.33.32.34 with respect to financial responsibility proof and recertification workshops.
Further discussion? Seeing none, closing remarks, Representative Green?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So this is just codifying what MDA has been practicing so far. And I renew my motion to have this laid over.
All right, House File 4164 is laid over. Members, that is all our business for today. So our next meeting is Tuesday, March 12th. Representative Anderson?
Yeah, we're done for the day a little bit early, which is pretty good to get done that quickly. Just had a procedural question. The bill you had, 4322, moving on to environment, the statutes all pertain to the Department of Ag. Why is it not staying in this committee?
Representative Anderson, so per my understanding in discussing with Chair Hansen, I believe he wanted to see these types of new technologies to see what kind of environmental impact they have. And so we did discuss that the bill will come back to agriculture, so it will be laid over.
It will come back.
Yes, it will come back. Further discussion? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vane. I noticed today with Dairy Day that there are items on our tables here, and I just want to recognize that the young lady from Greater Food is in my district, and she does classes promoting dairy, and so check out her website at Greater Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harder. Any further announcements? Representative Cha?
Yes, thank you for the treats. The cheese curds was delicious. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, members. Good work today. Oh, Representative Ream.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will second that the Greater Good, we visited the farm there, and they have not only good food products, but their cows are super cute. So thank you for bringing the treats.
Representative Hansen.
Nope, I didn't have anything.
All right, members, this meeting is adjourned.